The VGRT Gaming Podcast, episode 537, recorded on May 7th, 2019.
Welcome to the 537th edition of the TD Gaming Podcast and 370th episode of Video Game Roundtable. I am TJ Dinser.
I am Scott Dirk.
And I am Jonah Falcon.
VGRT Gaming Podcast focuses on game news from around the industry and a gaming flashback.
Yeah. So last week's podcast had to be tossed because the audio was terrible and I wasn't going to bother recording it again because the news was boring. I cannot say that about the news this week. There's a lot of big, heavy news. And you know what? There's some of it we're not even going to discuss. For example, Sony finally gave in, and EA Access is going to be on the PlayStation. For those of you who don't know, it's sort of like Netflix for EA. It's either $5 a month or $30 a year, which is a really good deal considering how games are $60. So if you pay $30 for an entire year, you get to play games early and for free on their subscription. So, yeah, it's pretty worth it. I saw a lot of people poo-pooing this in Twitter because it's EA. It's like it's some curse. But most people were really excited because, you know, I mean, it's worked really well on PC and Xbox. The only thing that people are a little bit annoyed at is that you can't link your accounts to everything. Like, if you have EA Access, it either has to be on Xbox or PC or PlayStation. You have to pay for each one separately. Although it's a minor gripe, I think, because it's $30 a year. You know, if you spend $60 for Xbox and PlayStation, basically doing it for one game's worth the a price they can buy a game. So.
Mm-hmm.
I think that would be a problem for me if I wanted the service, because I would want them to recognize me on all the consoles that I'm on if I wanted that.
Well, I mean, it just pick and choose, you know. You don't have to have both. I mean, they're EA games, you know, they don't really have exclusives, so it's not like you're missing out on anything. One person was a little bit annoyed because he plays Battlefield on PC and he plays a different game on Xbox. So that is a minor gripe. But like I said, it's not that big a deal. I mean, you just pick one console that you want to go with. The only question is if it's going to be on the PlayStation, I wonder how soon it's going to be on Nintendo. The problem with the PlayStation version is that there's less software because they don't do backwards compatibility like Microsoft does.
Uh-huh.
So it's the PlayStation 4 is not equipped to do back PC. You have to actually do straight up ports, and EA is not going to do that. So, but still, you know, you get to play Madden a couple of days early. You get to play Anthem without spending a dime for it. You know, see what this is like. Oh God, Anthem is bad. I'll wait until they fix it.
I've already begun to hear that it's better than where it was when it started.
Anthem? Of course it is. Just like it is with Destiny and all that. It's just that if you know anything about the development of Anthem, they didn't know what they wanted, basically. Management kept on telling Bungie, hey, we want this. No, 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 we want this. No, 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 we want this. I mean, not Bungie, I mean BioWare. And they should have just let BioWare by itself, you know. I mean, you don't see Microsoft going to Mojang and saying, do this, do that. No. The most Microsoft does is, okay, here are the skins that we're going to release this month. We're going to have a Batman skin, a Joker skin, and a Wonder Woman skin, blah, 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 blah. You know, nothing that, you know, all the cosmetic stuff. But Mojang just does Minecraft, and Microsoft knows that. Microsoft says, you know what? You made a couple $1 billion doing Minecraft. Keep up what you're doing. We'll just let you do whatever you want.
Yeah, they're coming out with the Minecraft dungeons, so I'm sure that'll make them even more money.
We also have an article about Minecraft later in the podcast. We'll discuss that later. But, I mean, you know, if you're a PlayStation owner, by all means, get EA Access. $30 for a year, you know. Try games before you, you know, you'll have the games and you won't have to do it. You know, it's like if Madden sucks, so what? If Madden is going to suck this year, at least you know that you have 49 other games that you can play.
Guess anyway, it keeps making the fun, they'll just keep making the game.
Yeah. So, my... So I have a lot of interesting things that I've been playing. First things first, I played The Council, a game that I've been looking at for a long time because it was an adventure game that had role-playing elements. And I will say, it's one of the only games I've played that I didn't know where the plot was going. This is one batshit crazy game. I'm not even going to bother describing the story. All I'm going to say is that it opens with you at a conference in the late 18th. Oh, no, it's in the 18th. Well, let's just say you meet George Washington as one of the guests of the and Napoleon Bonaparte as part of a council that rules the world. And basically the plot surrounds the Louisiana Purchase. But it is so friggin' strange. It goes places you would never guess it would go. And I got the worst ending because I played it like a Telltale game. Because, with Telltale games, no matter what choices you're going to make, everything's going to be A-okay. Not in this game. If you make the wrong choices over the course of the game, you will suffer. And it'll tell you at the end, yeah, you fucked up. You lost. Bye. Which is refreshing in a way. I mean, the old Sierra games, one of the games was to see how many ways you could die. But this game just lets you fail your entire story. So I might play it again sometime. Not now. It is just a weird, 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 weird adventure game. But I do like the RPG elements. Because basically, certain conversational options will pop up, or if you have enough energy, or if you have enough, I don't want to call it a magic spell, but, if you have reagents that can allow you to do them, it is just, I hope they make a Council Season 2. I'd like to continue this story, even though with my story, the game ended. It's bizarre. It's definitely worth $10. Normally, I think it's $30, but it is just so weird. And then I decided to do something I haven't done in a very long while. I've decided to dabble in an MMO. It's a small MMO. I mean, hardly anybody's ever played it. I think you've heard of it. It's called World of Warcraft. And it's only out of curiosity because they made so many changes to the way you build your character. I wanted to see the changes they made. So I'm doing the freebie until 20th level thing. And, I chose my normal character, which is a priest, and this time I chose human priest. And you don't have that branching thing anymore. No, they just give you your abilities as you go along.
Huh.
Like, on the other hand, it's still World of Warcraft, and I'm rediscovering why so many people play it. I play of all the MMOs I've played, just moving your character around feels right, You ever play an MMO and the characters all feel kind of floaty?
Yes.
World of Warcraft feels solid. It feels like when you're running to Goldshire, it doesn't feel like you're a sprite on top of other sprites. No, it feels like you're running, And I think that's one of the reasons, aside from the loot. Loot's always been good in World of Warcraft. But just the weight of the characters. And the design of the characters. And even if you copied the design of the characters like WildStar did, World of Warcraft still has a weight to it. And I'm doing my usual crafting too, tailoring and enchanting and, of course, cooking. And you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to start fishing again.
Yeah.
The game I got from Gamefly this time is Bendy and the Ink Machine. I hear it's really dark. I haven't started it yet. And finally, I got a full build of a game that I've been talking about, which I've been really looking forward to, and that's Swag and Sorcery. So, basically, it's a little bit different than I thought it would be. You do recruit adventurers. They don't wander into your town because you're attracted to them. No, you have to hire them, and you have to outfit them, but you don't control them when they're going off on missions. The best you can do is give them healing potions that they'll quaff when their hit points get too low. I finally finished one of the bosses. It feels great. It's done by the same guys who did Punch Club and Graveyard Keeper. So if you're into those games, if you're into either one, you'll get into this one. It has that feel of doing the first thing. It's really, really, really basic and simple. But I can see where the complexity is starting to ramp up. Because you need to get the resources. You need to break down those resources. You need to create stuff. There's a lot of crafting in this game, but not the onerous crafting. It's more like you need planks to build this building. You need oak planks, okay? And you did build the United iron bark planks. Oh, you need copper ingots and all that stuff, you know. So far so good. It's I'm not gonna say it's a what do they call those games? Those RPGs in which you do nothing and let the heroes do whatever for themselves. I forgot the name of it. But it's not that kind of RPG. It's more like you outfit your guys and then you send them off on a quest and you can watch the quest going. And you can also pull them out of the quest if it gets too close to failure. Because if you fail, all the stuff that you earn goes away. You still res those guys. But if you yank them away, I think you just lose one or two items. But you get most of the stuff that you earned. So I would say, yeah, it's really, really fun so far. And I think it's really up Scott's alley, Scott. I think you will really enjoy this game.
Yeah, I've seen videos of it. It looks interesting. Probably have to try it sometime and see what it's like.
Like I said, it's one of those games in which it's half active, half passive. You know, of course, a lot of the work that goes into building your town. I just built the second level of the guild hall. It's not too difficult to build buildings yet. And I notice there's a lot of stuff that's popping up for items I don't have. And now that I've opened up two more, there are two more things. And basically the adventures, you can see what you'll earn if you might earn if you go there. Sort of like saying, well, I need oak, so I'm going to go to the first dungeon or forest because they have oak there. But they don't have oak and they have I need iron bark, but it's in the third dungeon. You know, that sort of thing. So it's a lot of strategizing in that way. So it's both simple and you can feel the depth coming up at the same time. Sort of like Punch Club, actually. In Punch Club, you can't really affect what your boxer does. You can only tell him, you can only give him what he's going to be able to do, and then you stand back and let him fight, and you see the results of it. That's basically what this is. So, anyways, I recommend it. It's not out yet. It'll be coming out in like a week or so. I don't know. I think it's May 20th. I don't know. It's coming out soon. So yeah, I'm enjoying it. So what have you been playing, Scott?
I'm still playing Octopath Traveler in Minecraft, and I've completed everybody's second chapter, and now I'm starting into the third chapter for these characters, and it's starting to ramp up to each of their conclusions. And I'm, of course, doing side quest stuff to get my characters a little bit more powerful. And it's really interesting combining their different jobs with the secondary job abilities. You make them a little bit more powerful or a little bit more interesting, I guess. Like the apothecary, you can combine them with the cleric, and so then he's this all-around healer and support character. The sorcerer does well apparently with the merchant abilities, because the merchant can cast wind spells and even out his elemental attacks by that way. And the story is fun too. I'm enjoying the story and the combat, so it's keeping my interest. I've played about 70 hours and I think I'm only halfway through so far, but I'm a person that takes their time with the game.
So I'm going to share something with you that you might not.
Before you say anything, Swag and Sorcery is coming out this Thursday on the 9th. So by the time this podcast is out, it'll be available.
Okay, awesome.
So I'm going to share something with you, Scott, that you may not know about Octopath Traveler that I actually found to be really, really cool as far as the way they built the game. So the way that the map works in Octopath Traveler It's built as a circle. You might have, if you don't know the game. And like basically, in each of the towns that contains a character is built on this circle. And the way that Octopath Traveler is built is that if you go left or if you go right from the or like from alongside the circle, counterclockwise or clockwise, you will collect a bounce. The characters are positioned in a way that you'll collect a DPS. I think actually like two DPS, a support class, and like a mage.
That's exactly what I did. I picked Cyrus, and then I went left. I picked up Ophelia next, and then Ulbrick, and then Therion. So there you go.
And it's built that way that, like, if you go left or if you go right, like counterclockwise or clockwise, the four characters that you collect on your path will be a part of that balanced sort of party. Mm-hmm. Like, for I went with Primrose, and I ended up going left to Alphen, the apothecary, mm-hmm. who ended up being my item guy, and then I went going to Therion, who was my thief, and then Hanet, who is the hunter, who are my two DPS. So it's interesting. It's interesting the way they built that to work that way, where it kind of like, I don't want to, you have the choice, but it's almost sort of an illusion of choice where you're going to build yourself a balanced party based on the characters that you should run into first, regardless of which direction you go.
I did eventually, I collected everyone, and I try to rotate them around so I can do everyone's story and try to keep them leveled up as we go along. And I've also found that in certain cases, it might, like with Cyrus and Alphen, Cyrus has a chance to fail at a scrutiny, but Alphen will always succeed so long as he's the right level. He'll always succeed. And I don't know if that's because of Cyrus being rogue and Alphen is noble, supposedly, but also like Tressa and Therion has a chance to lose, but you'll get it for free. Tressa can buy it, but of course you're buying the item, so it's, you know, it's a cost there. So I thought it was rather interesting that even though they are on the same path, it's still different.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they put a lot of thought into like how you collect the characters and how they synergize with one another and how they interact with the world.
Mm-hmm. And that's right. When you go through the chapters 2 and 3, you'll get party banter. If whoever's in your party will interact with the person's story that's happening, and they'll give a reaction to that story. And I thought that was nice, out of depth as well.
Cool. So anyways, what have you been playing, TJ?
I've been chipping away at Mortal Kombat 11. I picked up the game last week. I've been writing guides for it. If anyone wants to know how to do fatalities, I got your hookup. It's fun. I'm enjoying the game so far. Like, Mortal Kombat 11 is probably the most balanced I've seen of the series. There are some characters that stand out pretty highly, but like, I feel like every character is fun in some way to play. Of course, you got like the standards like Sub-Zero and Scorpion. Some of the characters from Mortal Kombat X came back, like D'Vorah. One of the new characters I really, really enjoy. He's called the Collector, and apparently he's actually been around in the lore for a long time. He's basically a six-armed dude, sort of like Goro, but with two more arms. He's got a bad.
Yes, he's like Goro, except he has more arms. That makes him better, right?
To the extreme.
Well, he has a backpack that he basically carries a bunch of relics in, and he uses them in combat, and it's really fun because he's basically got a magical murder bag, and it makes for some really fun combos and moves and whatnot. And I've really been enjoying playing him. The story is probably them. I mean, it's standard NRS like schlock. I would say that well, NetherRealm Studios is always sort of grindhousey when it comes to their stories.
Yeah, but everybody knows that the worst part of the game is Ronda Rousey, both in game and out of game.
Yes, I mean Sonya Blade is really good, and it's a shame that she's voiced by Ronda Rousey.
By the way, for those of you who don't know, not only is she a terrible actress, but we found out a lot of things about Ronda Rousey. She is a horrible, horrible, horrible person.
Yeah.
She's racist. She's bigoted. She's everything. Just. I don't know how anybody can, you know. And she's and aside from that, she's extremely rude. She's abrasive. And it's like, I don't know, it's like picture the worst stereotype of white trash. That's who she is, except she's not 500 pounds.
I didn't hear about the racist part. I knew about the transphobia. She doesn't believe that starts from the fact that if somebody is well, I'm not going to go to the mat for Ronda Rousey. Even if she wasn't transphobic, she also at one point believed that Sandy Hook was a hoax. So that's unacceptable.
And she's also anti-vaxxer. And meanwhile, here in New York, we have a smallpox outbreak. So let's move on, because I really don't want to go down this path. We're going to be talking 30 minutes about someone we don't really care about. Except for the fact that she's one of the characters from Mortal Kombat.
The rest of the game is really good, though. Like, it would be cool if at some point, like, I don't know if they could, but, like, maybe replace Ronda Rousey's voice. The game is good. I'm going to be competing in this weekend. I'm actually heading to Texas Showdown in Houston, where I'm going to be doing Mortal Kombat 11, BlazBlue Crosstag, and Guilty Gear Xrd, three of my favorite games right now, and we'll see how I do.
Well, if you win the grand prize, be sure to send some of it our way.
Good luck, TJ.
The BlazBlue Crosstag and BB Tag and Guilty Gear are part of like Arc System Works World Tour. So I don't know if I do well, there's a chance of like going to a World Championship.
That's
but,
Will they pay your flight?
I pretty much have to get first place, which is an astronomically low chance of happening. But who knows? Maybe I'm good enough.
Well, you said in some competitions you finished, what, seventh? Sixth? I mean...
I finished ninth at Canada Cup. So, like, who knows? Maybe it'll be my day. I certainly practice all the time. So I have always felt that I'm one good day away from, like, just hitting the right... No, the right route of people that puts me in the top eight, and we'll see what happens. I really feel
confident.
Interesting
conflict of interest, though, with Twin Galaxies.
It's not. I mean, like, we cover people. No one ever said we couldn't be those people.
That's true. Anyways, so let's move to the gaming flashback. Go ahead, Scott.
Okay. Gaming flashback is Lucidity. Lucidity is a 2D side-scrolling platform puzzle game developed and published by LucasArts for Microsoft Windows and Xbox Live Arcade. The game involves helping Sophie, a little girl wandering through her dreams in search of her Nana, who has disappeared from her life. Sophie walks innocently across the screen to the end of each level. Instead of controlling her directly, players control a cursor and use objects such as stairs, trampolines, and slingshots to get her across platforms and protect her from enemies. Similar to Tetris, these items come randomly with an icon in the corner showing which object will come next. Players can hold on to one item for use later on, but they cannot discard items. Within the level, there are fireflies that can restore Sophie's health if she is hit by enemies, and which unlock bonus levels if collected in great numbers. If Sophie falls into hazards, such as thorns, the player has to restart the level.
Yeah. This game is basically the anti-Limbo, whereas Limbo is monochromatic and dark and scary. Lucidity is very candy-colored. Here's the thing. Her grandmother didn't disappear from her life. I mean, she did in a way, but she died. So the entire game is Sophie dealing with that death in her dreams. So as she gets more and more depressed, the levels get darker and more depressing. The final levels, though, brighten up as she starts to get over, as she starts to cope with her grandmother's death. I'm gonna say this is one game you should go to YouTube and look up the ending, and you will not see a more heartwarming ending. Without any context, it's still heartwarming. And it's really funny because this game actually started off as a game in an internal LucasArts contest called Dream Play. So they gave out awards, little ribbons, right, blue ribbons, to each of the developers for something like best graphics, best sound, best gameplay, and all that. The developers who entered in the prototype for Lucidity, they got no ribbons whatsoever. None. Ironically, this was the only game from that contest that actually got produced and published. So one of the team members went to the people who made the ribbons for the contest and had to make black ribbons for all the team members, which said LucasArts Dream Week, loser, instead of winner. But underneath it, it said, but our game got made. It's really funny. And look who's laughing now.
It's definitely taking some sour grapes and making some wine out of it. So, whatever. I mean, they made their game. It's interesting. It stuck with people. What more can you ask for?
I mean, they lost the battle, but won the war.
This sounds like the game that, this sounds like a good game. You know, just dealing with loss and dealing with pain like that, and
gameplay itself near the end can get frustrating.
I like the mechanic.
That part of it is random. Sometimes you'll get stuff that you can't use, and it's like no, give me. It's like when you're playing Tetris, and you really need the I block. You know, I need the I block. Where's the I block? You keep on giving me the S blocks. What's going on here?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, those blocks have names, by the way, but I can't remember them.
What was S block? I haven't played Tetris. I don't try and delve into the mysteries of it.
But this game is interesting, and it was kind of reminded me a little bit of The Lemmings, where you have more agency on what tools to use.
Yeah, you also had like 50 or 100 lemmings that
I know.
A couple can die just so you can figure out which ones are the ones that. And of course, there's no way in Lucidity, if you quit, you know, if you give up, you can't just press a button and make her head explode.
Oh,
that's what happens in Lemmings.
I know, but that'd be really gruesome in that game.
Yeah, but it's a dream, so it'd probably pop like a balloon.
Oh, just make her wake up and redo the dream. Jeez, Jonah.
Anyways, so yeah, this week the first two news items are really, I wouldn't say depressing. Well, I don't know if the first news item is depressing. More like finally an answer to what's been going on. So, yeah. So, someone who plays League of Legends, go ahead, TJ.
Riot Games employees walk out in protest, from Variety. And what many industry insiders believe is a North American first, employees of a video game developer Riot Games walked out of their jobs on Monday to protest treatment at the company. Specifically, the Rioters, the internal nickname for the employees of the studio behind League of Legends, were protesting the company's use of mandatory arbitration in cases of sexual harassment and sexual discrimination. While Riot announced on Friday that it would soon start giving new employees the option to opt out of such arbitration, Monday's event organizers say it isn't enough. We're walking out against forced arbitration of past, current, and future employees, including contractors and those involved in current litigation. An organizer who asked that her name not be told Variety. She added that they don't want it to be an opt-out option, but rather just not part of the contracts. Riot's recent decision to rid itself of some forms of mandatory arbitration will only take place after current litigation is resolved, and in its current state, the promise wouldn't impact current employees, only new hires. The promise to make changes to the company's arbitration came after Riot Games employees started planning a walkout. The walkout was spurred by Riot's attempts to end two lawsuits about sexism and misconduct at the studio via forced arbitration. The organizers said that talk of a walkout has been brewing at Riot for about half a year. The forced arbitration is what pushed it over the edge, she said. Sarah Dardofshire, a technical product manager at Riot Games, said the company's forced arbitration policies has her questioning the direction the company is headed. We've all experienced some form of harassment throughout our careers, and we want our voices heard, she told Variety via email. I was really content working at Blizzard when Riot reached out to me to join them last year, but what really convinced me to jump ship was their advocacy for change and making the industry as a whole a better place, and paving the way for what good can be. The recent decision revolving around forced arbitration has me questioning the direction we are moving towards, and I'd like to voice my concern around the matter. I'm hoping leadership will listen and realize the impact that the decision they are making has on many rioters. Ideally, they'd reconsider and help support the whole of Riot equally. The walkout kicked off at the San Francisco and Los Angeles offices at 2 p.m. Pacific time, with some employees leaving Riot offices to gather in a guest parking lot outside. The plan is to have a number of guest speakers talk, an opportunity for others to speak to the gathering, and then for the gathering to break into groups to discuss issues they face at Riot. The event was meant to wrap up at 4 p.m. Pacific time. And the hours.
By the way, this article is actually posted when the walkout actually happened, which is why they're talking about what they plan to do instead of what happened.
Yeah, hashtag Riot Walkout began to gain steam on Twitter, with people mostly offering support for the people protesting, including developers from other studios and Liz Schuler, secretary treasurer of the AFL-CIO. While organizers say the walkout isn't linked to any union effort, Game Workers Unite plan to be at the event to offer their support.
Yeah, this was yesterday, by the way, obviously. I have to say, I'm a member of SAG-AFTRA, which is AFL-CIO. So I have to, I generally side with any unionization.
Yeah, I mean, like, people argue up and down, left and right about how good unions are, if they're bad or whatever. But like, games workers need it.
I know.
It might be dangerous for me to say that, but at the same time, like, there really is like a lot of dangers, a lot of like questions, a lot of like, what happens if I don't have this job tomorrow? For a lot of people working in this industry. Not only like in journalism, but also in development, like in artistry, like there's so many holes in this business. And I
don't know why they, maybe this will start happening, because here's the thing. Can you imagine employees threatening a workout during crunch time? The publisher would go friggin' nuts.
Yeah. And like, the threat is that if you don't do this, then somebody else will, but
yeah, but at that very moment, time is money.
Right.
Then you'd have to find scabs, and here's the thing: if a union is joined, you don't want to be known as a scab in the past.
Absolutely, I support what Riot is doing. Like for everything that has happened in the last year, like.
Well, here's the thing, TJ. Why don't you briefly recap what happened in the last year for those of us, for people who haven't been following it?
Right. So within the last year, there have been multiple sexual harassment cases. There have been serious community manager incidents, and like. There's been just like Riot has gone out of its way to like shut this stuff down and not have these conversations, but they keep blowing up. And now we're at the point where like they took the cases that were happening against them right now. And they basically said, we have to force these cases into private arbitration where you can't air this out there and make us look bad. And that's what led up to Riot employees being like, oh, what? No. And they keep making bad decisions when it comes to, like, they say they get it, they say that they're going to be better, like, several times over, and then, like, an abusive boyfriend, they just continue to do the same dumb shit.
Yeah, I was looking some stuff up about this story, and I was reading that the COO, Scott Gelb, was put on 2-month suspension, but that looks like it was from December 13th last year, so I'm not sure how recent or relevant that is, but maybe it does go along with what you were saying, TJ, about the abuser continuing to do their thing. So I don't know if they're actually improving anything at the company. The,
here's the thing, you know, nothing's going to change unless it hits them in the pocketbook, basically.
That's, yeah.
You know, they'll, you know, it's a culture. It's a culture there. And the culture there was really shit. I mean, their hiring practices was this bullshit of, well, are they bros? You know, basically saying, you know, are they good gamers, you know? But basically it was basically a bros before hoes sort of thing, you know? Like, a woman can't be a gamer. She's female. How could she be a true gamer? How could she be competitive? All this lizard brain bullshit. And, you know, here's the thing. For those of you who play League of Legends, you know, you're not... You can play League of Legends and not have to feel like you're like these people. Okay, so don't feel guilty about it. Just know that a lot of the people who made the game are shits, basically. You know, and a lot of the developers, you know, working there are not, obviously. So just know that there's going to be a lot of turnover before it can get better, you know. There has to be turnover. I mean, you have to cut at some point. Here's the thing. Microsoft told Marcus Persson, aka Notch, to go the fuck away when they bought Mojang, because they knew he was a white supremacist. You know, as a matter of fact, one thing that makes me chuckle is, you remember when Tim Schafer was looking, you know, was talking about, you know, saying about Psychonauts 2, and Persson offered him, I'll give you $12 million to finish the game. And he said, no, you know, I'm going to need a lot more than that. Then, like, 2 years later, he starts the crowdfunding on Fig, and he's only asking for $2 million. That sort of tells you, he turned down $12 million from Marcus Notch Persson to make a game for $2 million, because he knew what sort of person that was. And there was this big kerfuffle that Microsoft wasn't going to have him at the 10th anniversary for Minecraft. And the response is, yeah, he's a shit. They don't want him around.
Yeah. And, like, I know people that work at Riot, and I know that they're good people. Like, I would hope that they're not doing terrible things when nobody's looking. But the fact of the matter, like, is there is, like, I mean, there is a toxic element to League of Legends. There is a toxic element to Riot. And
yeah, but here's the thing about the toxicity. I mean, let's face it. The toxicity is in multiplayer online games is everywhere because of anonymity. I mean, you have Overwatch. You have Dota, you know. I mean, there's just so many ways you can, you know, cull the herd from, you know, the from the main gaming thing, you know. But on the other hand, you know, you have to wonder if some of the toxicity from within Riot seeped down to the player base, which is a damn shame, you know, because at E3, Riot made the best friggin' parties. I mean, they would rent out an entire bar. It would be bar food and beer and soda free for everybody who attended. It was great. I mean, at least they knew how to throw a party at E3.
The thing with about the toxicity at Riot Games is it's not just isolated to Riot Games.
No, it's basically all of the upper heads. I mean, well, I'm just saying, I mean, Riot Games, all the people who owned Riot Games are basically just bro dudes who are really cavemen.
That's what I mean. These bro dudes came from somewhere. They didn't came from Riot. Yeah. They just gathered at Riot.
I'm not saying that toxicity is confined to Riot. I'm just saying that League of Legends. Like, I played a lot of multiplayer games, and, like, League of Legends is among the games that I, like, actively will campaign to tell people who haven't played League of Legends, don't. Your time is better spent elsewhere.
At least, like, in Xbox Live, you can mute everybody. Communication is important, like, in League
Apex
of Legends.
Apex Legends? The first time I ever played an Apex Legends match on PC, like, within the character selection screen in the first 5 seconds of my first game, somebody called me a cuck and told me to kill myself. I would still recommend that people play Apex Legends.
You know what's interesting is that for a long while, Rainbow Siege was the nicest place to be, but I think part of it was because they were so scared that the game would get canceled and shut down that they had to put up this face, at least, you know, or the people who are committed to the game were committed to the game, you know. When it started getting more and more popular, then the toxicity started to seep in. So it's sort of like, you know, you have people who play these games who are committed to the game, you know, and then you have people who are just there to yammer on. I mean, here's the thing. There are some toxicity, which is basically people who are super competitive, you know, which I don't approve of, but at least I know where they're coming from, you know. I mean, right. I play sports. There are some people who are super competitive, you know. You fucking asshole. How could you do that shit? You suck. That's fine to an extent, you know. What's it called? I mean, yeah, it's not fine, but I'm just saying at least it doesn't make me feel uncomfortable. It just makes me feel like that person is a shithead, you know.
Right. And I think to a degree, like, part of the toxicity for a game like League of Legends and possibly for other team games like it is that you can't really be your own player in League of Legends. If one part of the team falls apart, then the entire team falls apart. And it makes people really bitter and really stressed and really angry when they're trying to climb. And then you have these people that just, like, give up on it and just decide, I don't care anymore. I can't have a good experience here, so I'm going to make it a bad experience for everybody else.
Which is sort of helping them because it's sort of a subtle gatekeeping there. You know, it's their way of keeping up people they don't want.
That's the kind of culture where it's like this, I got dog versus dog, you know, kill or be killed, I gotta be the best, and losing sight of having fun and having camaraderie around with people, and that just seems really sad that...
Okay, I hate to play to a stereotype here, but you also have to understand that a lot of these people don't have the best social lives, and this is the only place where they're accepted, and the only place where their behavior is accepted. So they stay here because if you acted like that in front of another person, you'd get the shit kicked out of you. You'd learn very quickly not to behave that way. Here, no one cares.
I guess that's why I play single-player games.
That's why fighting games are the most pure of competitive endeavors.
Yeah, but at least in most fighting games, if you're
the only person.
Okay, what I like about fighting games is at least most of the competitions, you're standing next to the person you're playing against. It's not anonymous. If they piss you off too much, just whack them with your fist. You know, show them what a real fighting game is like.
Well, I was going to say more along the lines of if you're playing a fighting game, the only person who decides whether you win or lose is you.
Although I will say, you know, at Evo, I remember the video of the Street Fighter competition. I think it was Street Fighter 4, when this guy just reduced this female competitor to tears with his misogyny. So it's not limited to MOBAs and other online team games. You know, you can have it there. Fortunately, at competitions, they'll just kick your ass out. Or hopefully they will.
Not only that, but, like, the fighting game community is a rabid set of people that will come down on a person if they're an asshole that's making everybody else look bad.
Anyways, let's go from one shithead to another shithead. Claptrap actor accuses Randy Pitchford of physical assault, and this comes to us from Game Watcher. The upcoming release of Borderlands 3 has taken a bit of a backseat as of late amidst the recent controversy that's popped up between Randy Pitchford, the CEO of Gearbox, and David Eddings, the former voice of Claptrap and Gearbox VP of marketing. By the way, every time I say David Eddings, you know, I'm thinking about the author? David Eddings.
Me too. I had to go Google that.
No, but they're two different people. Same thing. One is a lot crazy. Older. I think David Eddings died, actually.
Yes, he did. In 2009.
But anyways, so David Eddings mostly kept to himself while Randy Pitchford wasn't quite as careful, noting that Eddings was, quote-unquote, highly compensated for his work, which his former employee then seemingly felt obligated to correct. Among other things, Eddings alleges that Pitchford physically assaulted him. According to Eddings, who posted his take on the matter at hand on Twitter, he eventually not only accepted Gearbox's invitation to provide Claptrap's voice yet once more, but he also agreed to do it for free, if he got paid for what past royalties he was owed, plus an apology from Pitchford. Quote, for something I've never spoken about publicly until now, Randy physically assaulted me in the lobby of the Marriott Marquis at GDC 2017. Personally, I think Randy's been out of a tilt the past few years. He's not the victim he portrays himself to be. I even blocked him a couple of years ago for stalking me on social media. Furthermore, Eddings also alleges that Pitchford siphoned money from the company. Quote unquote, it seems a bit conspicuous that he chimed in on my salary but didn't mention anything about the $12 million of revenue he siphoned away from the employee royalty pool. He mentioned that Gearbox employees take lower salaries and then are offered royalty shares instead. 2K says they won't give a statement regarding the ongoing lawsuit, but if an allegation is false, then it sort of seems easier just to deny it since that's the only reason they're mentioned, said Eddings, concluding on an interesting note. The whole thing stinks. Yeah, that's really nice. You know, you're going to pocket $12 million from the employees' salaries. You know, here, take lower salaries. I'm just going to take some of your money while I'm at it so you can have the lower salaries. But
if I was going to say, if only that was the most sleazy thing about Randy Pitchford.
Okay, here's the thing. People are more willing to believe David Eddings because, again, Randy Pitchford is a slime. If there's anybody who fantasized about being Duke Nukem, he's it. I remember Yahtzee Croshaw was actually asked to provide a script for Duke Nukem Forever, you know, in its last incarnation. And Yahtzee had the idea of making, you know, Duke a parody, you know, like, you know, a parody of the kind of character that he is. And they sent the thing back saying, no. We have to play Duke Nukem completely straight. So essentially they were saying, we don't want to make him a parody of Marty Stew. We want him to keep him as a Marty Stew and be absolutely straight about it, you know. And it's like, to say the least, Yahtzee was disappointed. It's just – Randy Pitchford is yet another bro dude. And I'm really getting sick of bro dudes, and not just in the video game industry. Or is it dude bro? Which is it? Bro dude or dude bro?
Dude bro. I don't know. Probably both. It probably works either way.
So you were saying, TJ?
I was just saying, if only stealing money from the employees was the most sleazy thing about Randy Pitchford.
Yeah, let's not forget aliens Colonial Marines, for one. Remember, there was an entire lawsuit about aliens Colonial Marines, because Gearbox took it, and they just, you know, they ran everything on higher machines for E3, and failed to optimize it for console.
Yeah,
and that's how you got that mess.
I still have colleagues that are super duper bitter over Aliens with Colonial Marines and won't forgive Gearbox for that.
Who worked on it or just played it?
Just played it. Just wanted that game to be good, and just like, it was so bad. It was so bad.
Yeah, but it's fun to play. It's fun to play in co-op simply because the bugs are funny bugs. I mean, there are certain games that you should play even though they're awful, like watching a bad movie. I mean, Ride to Retribution is one of them. You know? I mean, the worst kind of bad game is just the buggy thing that just crashes on you. I'm pretty sure people are going to start feeling that way about Hunt Down the Freeman because, you know, you still have the no-clip, you have the no-clip cheat, so anytime you get stuck, you can just skip it.
Like, I do want to say that, like, I'll probably play Borderlands 3 because that series is more than Randy Pitchford. Like, there are a lot of people that put in a lot of time and dedication to it, and they really do go out of their way to make it good. That said, like, Randy is the worst. I can look past him, but, like, I don't know that I like that guy.
It's okay. You can hate them if you want to. I mean, anybody who's dealt with them personally, you know.
I mean, for fuck's sake, who the fuck keeps a USB of porn in their pocket when they're going to medieval times?
What?
This is the thing that happened, Scott. This is the thing that happened to Randy Pitchford. He had a USB thumb drive of quote unquote a girl doing magic tricks that fell out of his pocket and was apparently discovered at medieval times.
Wow.
Now the rumors that the it may have been underage, I don't think that's ever been proven, but I don't know that I disbelieve it.
Wow,
it's horrible and sleazy either way.
Yes,
it's another of the Pitchford gossip.
Pitchford file.
That just reminds me of when the developers for Ant Simulator blew their crowdfunding money on booze and strippers. You remember that?
Oh,
jeez. That was like 3 years ago, remember?
And the curious thing about the Pitchford story, the thumb drive story, is that that was huge for like maybe 2 days, and then it disappeared entirely. Like, nobody ever questioned it again. And some people ask why.
Yeah, and it makes me wonder, you know, I mean, someone like, you know, someone can get forever exiled because some PR guy decided to make an ad saying John Ramirez is about to make you his bitch, and John Ramirez personally fired him the day after, you know, and now he's a non-entity. I mean, his wife is doing most developing now, while people like Randy Pitchford, you know, just roll, you know. I mean, I don't care. I mean, I'll be more shocked if someone like Sid Meier turns out to be something bad. Of course, that's almost impossible because I met the guy, and the guy is about as shrinking violet as you'll see. He is your typical guy who only wakes up when there's a board game in front of him. You know, his sons do all the talking.
Mm-hmm.
I know that Richard Garriott's a weirdo, but at least he's a weirdo in all the better ways. Have you ever met him?
No, I haven't.
Okay, Randy. For those of you who don't know who Richard Garriott is, he's Lord British. He did the Ultima series and all that stuff. And let me put it really clear here. When he says he's Lord British, he means it.
He has the whole costume and everything.
Yeah. And he's just the same in person. He's the sort of guy who would take $23 million and blow it just to be in space for 20 minutes. You know, we have to do a gaming history on that with NCSoft and Tabula Rasa and what shits NCSoft were. That's an entire story unto itself. But, yeah, I mean, I like goofy guys like Richard Garriott. You know, he's just he's made a ton of money and he's having a wonderful time and he's playing his own real life RPG, it seems. He's actually playing an RPG, and we're all NPCs to him. So anyways, yeah. So, I mean, I don't know. Here's the thing. We're in a period of where video games are moving from business to art even more. I mean, I'm not going to say video games were never art, right? But for a long time, video games are just business. That's it. If there was art in it, fine. But it was always a business. Now it's moving on like television and film. You know, they went from just being pure business to where people started doing artistic things with it. We're doing it now with video games. We're getting the tech in which we're able to do it. I mean, people can say a lot about Grease, but one of the things it isn't is a very good mechanical game. It's a work of art, but as a game, it's mediocre. But people love it because it's artwork. And right now, when that happens, you start to examine the people behind it. And there's a more of a greater light shown on them. And you know, right now with Me Too, you know, you can't be like that anymore. It's no longer going to be a boys only business. You're going to have a lot more people in there, and you have to, and that's what I say to gamers too. You know what? You know, women gamers are there. minority gamers are there, and they're not going to pretend not to be there. See, Gamergate didn't have a problem with girls and minorities. They had a problem with them announcing that they were girls and minorities in a game. You're okay so long as you hid yourself and basically were in drag as a guy or as a white guy, you know. But the thing is that gaming's get more diverse. So if you don't like it, well, find another hobby. I hear mom's friends are good.
And it's not these people haven't been there. It's that they are increasingly becoming comfortable with saying, I want more games that appeal to me, that I can feel comfortable with, that are cool, that are different, that are interesting. I don't want bro dude white guys fantasy all the time.
Here's the thing, though. But, you know, you want to see people who are like you in a game. And not a cheat. I mean, in Mass Effect, you can make the Shepard whatever you want. No. I mean, one of the biggest things, there's a reason why Samus is a girl is a trope, you know? I mean, I learned that the original Tomb Raider would have allowed you to be either a male or a female, adventurer. And they decided, you know what, screw it, we're just going to make it a woman. You know, and, okay, a sexy woman at that. But still, you know, people were having a female protagonist, and they couldn't make Lara a man. You know, that's why, like, what was the name of the game? The one that wasn't Infamous.
I never minded.
Prototype 2, the lead character is a black male. And you can't change that about him. That's who he is.
I never minded characters in the game not being like me.
You can say that because guess what? Most characters in games are like you. You know, but you can't say that about other people. I mean, let me ask you a question.
I'm trying to say, Jonah, that I've played games where there was a female lead, several of them, and that never bothered me. It's not a lot of them, but they are out there. And
saying,
I think.
Yeah, I'm just saying offhand. Can you tell me an Asian American protagonist in a game?
Grace in Gabriel Knight.
Okay, something that's not a JRPG.
That wasn't a JRPG.
Okay.
It was a Sierra game, in fact.
Okay.
Jane Jensen wrote it.
And I can always say more than you from Prey. But I'm just saying, you know, you can whenever you have a character that's not white and not male, it's basically the exception. You know, unless you're playing a JRPG. Yeah. But even then, you know, JRPGs, they include a lot of white characters in there.
I get what Scott's saying, though. Like, why do people get upset when that's not the case?
Remember how upset people became because that character was canonically gay? I think it was from Apex Legends, was it? Was it from Apex Legends that the guy got upset?
Gibraltar was gay. They got real upset that Gibraltar, the big Samoan dude, was gay. And, like, why? Why does that offend you? Why does that have to make
Will playing
sad?
Him make you gay? Or playing Gibraltar forwards the gay agenda?
Like, okay, this goes a little bit back to where we were at the beginning of this conversation about about someone. But, like, recently, Sonic...
Yeah, I'd like Randy Pitcher to be relegated to being referred to as someone.
Oh, no, worse than Randy Pitchford. Someone else. Oh. But Sonic Fox... So, Sonic Fox...
people lost their shit about him.
he was playing Mortal Kombat 11, and... He was joking about, like, beating up on the Sonya Blade character, saying, fuck TERFs, which is – Ronda Rousey is a TERF. She is a – for those who don't know what that means, it's trans-exclusionary radical feminist, which means that you're all about feminism, but you hate the idea of transgendered people being and a feminist. It's basically a way of saying you're a feminist, but you're also a transphobe.
I thought that was short for Turkish people.
No, TERF is a trans.
Oh, TERF. Okay, sorry.
No, Turks. You think of Young Turks.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
But even then, that's not really a Turkish person.
Okay.
So, Sonic Fox did himself a little joke. He posted some clips saying "fuck TERFs" while he was like devastating Sonya Blade as Garrus in the game, and people got upset about it. Like they sent it along to this dude. I guess his name is Lenham Grant.
I guess a lot of them were white males. Because you know what I really love is when white males try to be the white, you know, these guys who are actually, you know, right wing, start getting offended when people of color or gays or whatever, or women start attacking, you know, someone, who is a minority, but basically is like racist or something like that. It's like, no, you don't get to decide.
Do you know who I think it's Lynam Graham. He's a huge advocate for those people, and apparently, like, also the UK, the United Kingdom Parliament, all got mad at Sonic Fox for this, and basically said, "You don't understand. You're promoting violence against women. You don't know what it's like to be threatened and to have all this stuff."
And then you can just respond, "I am black. I am gay, and I'm a furry. Bring it on."
Exactly.
That's basically what he said at the Video Game Awards, basically.
You're telling a black gay furry that he doesn't know what it's like to feel threatened because you are upset that he called a turf a turf.
You know, I love it when people attack me, and I say, well, let me ask you a question. How many of your friends and and partners died from AIDS because the government wouldn't lift a finger to help you? You know, you don't have any scars. I have scars. So shut the fuck up, or I will beat you down. And that usually shuts them up.
It's just silly. It's silly that people feel the need to get upset over stupid things like that.
Yeah. Anyways, let's move on to something a little more happy. Scott, you can take this one, too.
Thank you. Okay. Microsoft teases new Minecraft AR game for mobile. This is from The Verge. Microsoft has started to tease what appears to be a new Minecraft game for mobile devices. The software giant used a video at the end of the company's Build 2019 keynote on May 6 to show Minecraft in augmented reality, running on a phone. In the video, Minecraft creator director Sax Person leaves his phone on a bench outside the Washington State Convention Center where Microsoft Build Developer Conference is being held. A passerby picks it up and is able to see Minecraft running in AR, suggesting that Microsoft is preparing a new game. Microsoft isn't commenting further about any plans for Minecraft AR. The teaser also notes that more information will be coming on May 17th, the 10-year anniversary of Minecraft. Microsoft has previously shown Minecraft running on the HoloLens headset, but that was simply a tech demo rather than a new game. Microsoft teaser feels like something bigger, especially as it is clearly tied to 10 years of Minecraft. And now, oh my god, the creepers.
I'm just saying, you know, you should really put passerby in quotes. That was definitely an actress. There's no way some random passerby with the cameras all there just picked up the cell phone.
And then, that's true.
Does this belong to anybody?
Right.
I have a feeling that this started a few years ago when Microsoft looked at Pokemon Go and said, oh, really? Well, let's see what we can do.
Yeah, have little creepers pop out behind places, especially if it's not lit well enough. I'll bring the paranoia of having everything lit wherever you go. Put torches down and put some sort of light down so creepers can't blow you up.
I wonder if this is going to be a free-to-play game like Pokemon Go. I'm willing to bet you it will be. I mean, Microsoft has the money, and it's basically a running advertisement for Minecraft anyway.
Uh-huh. Definitely.
DJ?
So it's Minecraft as an AR game?
I don't know. They didn't give too many details, just that something that said Minecraft AR, and I'm just kind of speculating what you would do in there.
You know what would be neat is if in the AR game you had to go to buildings and start picking at them with a pickaxe to get materials that you got would be sent to your Minecraft game. So you're actually going around mining stuff, and you know, it's sort of like Pokemon Go in which you have to go to specific places to find the really rare stuff. And if you go in the wrong place, well, guess what? The creepers will get you.
It would be really dope if you could designate a place as your home and like an augmented reality, just like build Minecraft stuff in it, like as sort of like build your little Minecraft AR world inside your house, and then go out, like Jonah said, go out and like mine materials and get resources to continue to do that.
I think that might be a little bit more too resource heavy. I think it's going to be basically you're able to go and mine resources outside of your home, and the resources you get will be special resources that you can't get in game, right? So they're giving you a reason to go out and start mining stuff. I mean, that's what I think. I mean, I have no idea. Maybe it's a new version of Minecraft. Because, you know, Minecraft is playable on a cell phone anyway.
Yeah, but you get a server world, so you would have to have link it between them somehow. I don't know. I guess that would work with the mobile version of Minecraft, but I don't think it would work with the other versions.
But I know it's simple, you know. It doesn't. What happens is the stuff that you mine will just be sent to, you know. And when you go to your regular Minecraft, you know, it's just data, you know, just numerical data. It says, oh, by the way, you have, you know, white gold waiting for you, or you have this kind of wood, or you have, you know, whatever, you know, whatever special resources that you can only get outside. Now, here's the thing, though. I wonder what would be really neat is how if it could do co-op. You know, two people with cell phones.
Well, I mean, like in a server, you can have, I guess, hundreds of people on at once. So that would be quite a lot. I don't know. I think this might be its own version of Minecraft. But again, we'll have to wait and see, I guess, because it's just a teaser right now.
Or it could be a full version of Minecraft that uses AR, but you could transfer the stuff, you could transfer whatever you build to another version of it. You know, there's a lot. Like I said, May 17th is 10 days away, so. So what are you doing for the 10-year anniversary of Minecraft, Scott?
I guess I'll probably have to set off some fireworks in the game or something.
Yeah,
that's probably what I'll do.
Yeah, I wonder what online stuff they're going to do for the celebration. Because there is not going to be an actual celebration. You know, it's not like there's
going to be... It's in Seattle.
No, what I mean is it's not going to be something that's open to the public.
Oh, yeah, there's tickets to go there. But I saw something about winning tickets for Minecraft's 10-year anniversary.
It's more like a private function. I'm pretty sure there's going to be a live stream.
Yeah, I saw on the website they were listing... 10 years and listing little things that happened each year, and then they did, you know, it goes from 2010 or 2009 all the way to 2019 and then to 2029. It says creepers escaped to Mars and captured time travel technology, and it was a funny little line there. And then it said, you know, come back on May 17th for whatever big announcement they have.
By the way, technically it's not the 10-year anniversary, because the official release, you know, the official build release was 2011, November 2011. I mean, the first time it ever started was in 2009. So let me ask you a question, though, Scott. When did you join?
I think I joined before 2011. It was like 2010, I think, or something like that.
You played the beta?
Yes, I did. I did play some of the beta before villagers were even introduced. And now I can't imagine Minecraft without the villagers. And it's just so amazing how far the game has come and the changes it's gone through. And it just feels like different eras each time that something big is introduced.
You know what's really funny is that the console version of Minecraft received their final update just last December.
I mean, that's
amazing. Yeah, the updated product.
10 years is long enough for a child to be born and make it all the way to middle school.
Mm-hmm.
That is such a long time.
But even better yet, think of it this way, TJ. A child starts first playing Minecraft when he's 4 years old, and then he keeps playing it. Now he's 14, but his entire life he's been playing Minecraft. His entire, you know, his entire cognizant life, you know, when you really know what's going on. Can you imagine your life being, you know, having that in your life for 10 years of your 14-year lifespan?
Right. Well, we grew up on stuff like Mario Brothers, but like I don't think anything was as immersive to us as Minecraft is to a lot of these kids.
Well, it's a building tool. I mean, you could do a lot of things with Super Mario, but not until Super Mario Maker came out like 2 years ago could you actually do anything with it. You know, I mean, I'm pretty sure there are kids who grew up with, Lincoln Logs and other building stuff from Lego, actually, now that I think about it. But Minecraft as a video game, you know, it's – and here's the thing. Also, Minecraft is a social thing too. So you're talking to other people for the most part.
Yes.
It's always offered a lot. It's always offered a lot of varied things to do. And it's just continued to vastly grow over those 10 years.
Well, let me put it this way. Minecon, if you ever watched Minecon, you notice half the people there are under the age of 15. You know, there's a lot of kids there. And here's the thing. How many conventions do you know which have kids in it? I can only think of one. That was the Power Rangers. But even then, it was mostly, you know, young, you know, preteens and teens. I mean, you had really young kids at Minecon.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, there's a reason why there's the Minecraft Education Edition.
That's a pretty good, cool edition too. They teach you chemistry and just all these other useful things. I still want to find a Minecraft map that teaches math that people have done math redstone, but I guess
oh god, come on, they made calculators in the game.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, Lord.
I still remember them making a cell phone in-game.
I feel like geometry would go really well in Minecraft.
What a great game Mojang and Microsoft have put together, and nobody else. No one of importance. Not one very specific person. Fuck him.
He should not be named.
You should not be named. Just, I mean, here's the thing, you know. You gotta get with the times. Anyways, look for our show notes at gamingpodcast.net, along with the industry news and our gaming history articles. If you enjoy feedback, leave us comments on our blog at gamingpodcast.net. All set us up at facebook.com/gamingpodcast. Subscribe to us on iTunes, leave some iTunes comments. You know, there is some other major news which I'm trying to remember, and I cannot for the life of me remember it. There's something big that happened, and I'm completely blanking on it.
Detective Pikachu, the yeah. Twitter account.
Here's the thing about Detective Pikachu. That trailer made the movie look so stupid that it went around to being cool again. It is so self-consciously bad, you know.
But that makes it fun.
I wish Mario Brothers had been that bad that it was good.
It was bad.
No, it was bad that was just bad.
Yeah, Mario Brothers wasn't self-aware. It was just bad.
You know, one of the games that... Did we ever discuss Vampire the Masquerade Bloodlines 2?
Yes.
Okay. They just announced that it's going to be playable at a convention. Unfortunately, the convention's going to be in Germany, but...
That's a shame.
That I'm really looking at. By the way, one of the most obvious killers is coming to Dead by Daylight... And it would shock you to think, why hadn't they used him before? It's, like, so obvious. But Ghostface is finally coming.
Oh, yeah. They completely ruined it for themselves, too, because they accidentally put a developmental build on Steam and leaked their own announcement.
But isn't it so obvious how Ghostface – you know, it's like, yeah, Ghostface. I mean, he's part of a semi-parody of slasher films.
I mean,
now, here's the question. Will there be more than one Ghostface?
I mean, Ghostface practically reinvented... Like, Scream practically reinvented horror in 1990s. It's like...
It was a 2000 film, wasn't it?
Was it?
I think, yeah. Unless I'm thinking about Scary Movie or... No, you're right. Scream was 1996.
Right. And it reinvented him as, like, the home stalker, like... terror of somebody coming into your house and attacking you.
Yeah, Scary Movie was the one that came out in 2000.
Mm-hmm.
And Scary Movie is the movie that killed all of that.
Yes.
So. Anyways, we will see you next week. And god damn it, I'm probably going to remember what I was going to talk about right after we log off.
Happy gaming, everyone.
Wait, did we get our handles?
No, we didn't. You jumped the gun there. You can find me at Twitter at Jonah Falcon.
I'm sorry.
You can find me at Twitter at Jonah Falcon.
You can find me at Johnny Chugs.
You can find me at Al Fouchard.
And now we can say we'll see you next week, even though you didn't see us last week.
Happy gaming, everyone.
Have fun, be cool, play games, y'all.